Special thanks to the school and its program and the students for participating. And council, thank you for shepherding the argument. All right, the case taken under advisement. Court will move to the second case of the day, Poe versus the United States. Mr. Coffey. Not related to any judge on our court, right?
No, Your Honor, unfortunately. If it pleases the court, my name is Tom Coffey, and I, along with Ray Miller, are also third-year law students from Notre Dame. By leave of this court, and under the supervision, again, of Mr. Robert Palmer, we are representing Jimmy Poe in this case.
All right. Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, this court granted two certificates of appealability, two issues of certificate of appealability. I will address the first issue, that of the continuing criminal enterprise, and Ms. Miller will address the second issue, that of the timeliness of the 2255 petition. Your Honors, the United States Supreme Court decided the case of Richardson, and in the case of Richardson, a defendant who was charged with a continuing criminal enterprise had been instructed that the predicate offense is making up the continuing criminal enterprise. The jury did not have to be unanimous as to what predicate offenses the defendant did. The United States Supreme Court decided that this violated the defendant in Richardson's case. It violated his constitutional right to due process. Similarly, just in this case, Mr. Poe, the jury was instructed that they did not have to unanimously agree on what predicate offenses he did in order to make up his continuing criminal enterprise. Therefore, following the Supreme Court decision in Richardson, Mr. Poe's constitutional right to due process was violated. We therefore ask this court remand this case to an evidentiary hearing to determine whether or not this error was harmless or whether it was not harmless. Not harmless error, I should say.
Why would we need an evidentiary hearing on that?
Well, Your Honor, I can only speculate as to what it is that would be demonstrated in an evidentiary hearing. The first matter is that his constitutional right was violated. The second one is, in following Lanier and Richardson, in Lanier, this court heard that the matter was settled in the district court, and then this court determined that there had not been harmless error. The reason why it would be an evidentiary hearing is we believe there could be facts that Mr. Poe would be able to demonstrate to show that there was harmful error.
Such as?
Such as, theoretically, I think that the most important thing is with a continuing criminal enterprise, the purpose of the statute is to go after drug kingpins. That's what the Supreme Court in the majority and dissent agreed on. The purpose of the continuing criminal enterprise statute is to go after drug kingpins. Mr. Poe was only found to have dealt in marijuana, only 100 kilograms of that. He was not found to have dealt with powder cocaine, crack cocaine, or heroin, something that the defendant in Richardson had been found to violate. Additionally, a seminal case here that this court heard was Lanier, where the person who was considered the drug kingpin, the defendant in Lanier, was fined $60 million and was found to have dealt in 600,000 pounds of marijuana. Mr. Poe was only fined $3,600. There's reason to believe that Mr. Poe was not a kingpin, and that would at least be, I would speculate that would be the initial reason why he'd be able to prove this harmful error.
We've got, I think it's 7 separate individual convictions for marijuana dealing in this case.
Yeah, sure.
And so even conceding that the instruction given on the continuing criminal enterprise was flawed because it did not require unanimity on the predicate offenses, why is that not harmless as a matter of law? Because we've got jury verdicts for which there is sufficient evidence on the 7 predicate offenses.
Your Honor, Understanding your question, my only response is, or my first response is simply that I can only speculate as to what he would be able to demonstrate. I just wanted to deal with the issue first that his constitutional right was violated, and then perhaps an evidentiary hearing would be the proper place for him to be able to demonstrate whether or not there was harmful error. I understand that your point, Your Honor, of course, is that given a case like Lanier and Richardson, that harmless error analysis was employed. However, again, the facts of those cases simply demonstrate that the purpose of the continuing criminal enterprise went after drug kingpins in those cases, whereas Mr. Poe is simply not a drug kingpin. I believe my time is up, Your Honors.
Or do you have a minute?
I have a minute. Well, Your Honors.
No, we start again from rebuttal.
Here's
a minute.
I'm confused.
He's in his rebuttal time right now.
Oh, he's in his rebuttal now. All right. Well, all right, we got to save some time for Ms. Miller.
Yes.
Right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Quinley?
No.
Oh, no.
See, you're missing the point. They're splitting their opening.
Oh, you're splitting your opening.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's not favored in this court, but we'll permit it in this instance.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right.
May it please the court? My name is Ray Miller, and I'll present the second issue in this case, the fact that Mr. Poe's objection to the improper jury instructions was timely. The Supreme Court recently held that when a newly established right, the newly established right established in Richardson, is the substantive basis for an appeal, as it is in this case, that there's a strict one-year time limitation, and that time limitation began the date the case was decided, June 1st, 1999. Mr. Poe raised his issue of improper jury instructions within 2 months of the Richardson decision. He filed a pro se 2241 motion, clearly indicating to the court that he disagreed and thought that his jury instructions were improper under Richardson. This timely pro se 2241 motion should be considered equivalent to a timely 2255 motion. His 2241 motion was not actually dismissed by the court until September 19, 2000. At that point in the order, the judge stated, if you wish to attack your sentence, you need to file a 2255 motion, and directed that the proper forms be mailed to Mr. Poe. At the time that Mr. Poe found out from the court and was told by the court to file his 2255 motion, raising the exact same issues that the court was aware of in the 2241 motions, his time from Richardson had actually already expired. Mr. Poe, as a pro se litigant, did everything right except simply fill out the wrong form when he sent his 2241 motion to the court. He met the very strict time limitations of Richardson when he let the court know in his 2241 motion that the jury instructions were improper. A 2241 motion and a 2255 motion are substantially similar, and this court has held that motions that are functionally 2255 motions should be treated as 2255 motions.
Again, now, he didn't send the 2241 to the original trial court, did he?
Your Honor, the record is unclear. He sent it to the Southern District of Illinois. Judge Gilbert is the one that signed that order, and Judge Steele was the original trial court. Unfortunately, the record is just inconclusive as to exactly why Judge Gilbert versus Judge Steele signed the order. Again, it doesn't appear that there was any attempt on Mr. Poe's part to try and circumvent anything. He was trying to let the court know that his jury instructions were improper and that he wanted a hearing on those merits. If there are no further questions, I'll save the rest of my time for rebuttal for Mr.
All right.
Coffey.
Thank you, Ms. Miller. Mr. Quinley.
Good morning, Your Honors. Michael Quinley for the Southern District of Illinois. I was the trial attorney in the case, and was responsible for the 2255. The court may already be aware of the practice in the Southern District, at least with Judge Steele and Judge Gilbert, and I believe the other judges as well, that until instructed to respond to a 2255 petition, we're not required to. So in this case, there was no harmless error analysis. There was no response on the merits. The court disposed of it on a couple of different rulings. After a motion for reconsideration disposed of it basically based upon the time limitation. It looked at Apprendi because it thought that Apprendi was a case decided within 1 year. I'd like to start, I guess, with the easy question, which is the harmless error, but I think the court's already clear on that. I understand counselor's desire to go back and re-argue the case, which was tested on direct appeal and was tested by the jury instructions given to the jury. And, you know, as this court stated in a footnote to the original decision, Poe never argued the evidence was insufficient to convict him. In fact, he would be hard-pressed to do so. So the jury's view of the case was different than counselor's, and the court's view was different, and the appellate court's view was different in terms of the sufficiency of the evidence. There isn't a kingpin element, but each of the elements that are required for CC, the jury found, and of course, it was seven in the indictment, but two of the specific drug offenses in the indictment were inchoate attempts. So in the jury instruction, five were referred to for the jury, and each of those five distributions were found. Now, the more interesting question, it's kind of backwards that we dispose on the merits before deciding on whether or not the court can consider the case. But, of course, the court can. The court, even though it hasn't found an instance yet, could equitably toll. I don't think exceptional circumstances is a doctrine that this court wishes to apply at all, and it certainly doesn't seem to fit this case. But I don't know what this court's view is. I guess the notion is that for post-conviction proceedings, you're on your own unless and until the court appoints counsel. And so I think, yeah, pro se litigants can make mistakes. And I guess the interesting question is, why wasn't the denial of the 2241 appealed from with the same request that had been made when it was filed, that if necessary, it be considered a 2255.
Well, maybe because he was instructed to refile it.
Well,
2255.
All right. So however the court wants to address that, I don't know. I'm troubled by these a lot.
Why was the original 2241 routed to Judge Gilbert? It was filed in the proper district, as I understand.
Well, because that's the district where he was confined,
but
according to the rules of 2241. But it didn't reference, like a 2255, the court of conviction. It was simply an appeal to a court where he was held.
But it also happened to be the court of conviction, right?
No, that was Judge Steele's court. The district was the court of conviction,
right?
But Judge Gilbert was not the judge who had presided over the case. Now,
right.
I'm not going to allege that Mr. Poe intentionally did this to avoid Judge Steele. I don't think he's that Machiavellian.
Okay, but the same district is the court of conviction and the court of confinement.
Right.
Right, and he sends it there. So he hasn't done anything wrong yet except for file as a 2241 rather than a 2255.
Right, and the court has criticized that if it's an attempt to get around the, going to the court that you're supposed to go to.
Why
by Machiavellian, did you mean Poe or the judge?
Pardon?
By Machiavellian, did you mean
Poe? I meant Poe. I'm not. I don't think there's any reason to believe, even though he did conduct a drug conspiracy and continuing criminal enterprise, that in his pleadings he was attempting to mislead anyone.
How did it get routed to Judge Gilbert, just in the ordinary course?
Yes.
Okay.
And I guess I should know this. Greenville is in the East St. Louis division, but Marion is in the Benton division. Now, I don't know if that's why it went to Judge Gilbert, is that because he was residing in Marion, because I thought he was in Greenville. And so like I say, it's kind of a strange.
One thing we're sure of is that Notre Dame is no place near there.
Well, it's kind of a strange case. In this case, the harmless error is the easy, and no, there is nothing factual about it. It's a pure question of law. It wasn't addressed by myself. nor the court below. I mean, in the response, it mentions about, well, the government didn't explain why Hawkins and Story were different than Poe. Well, they attach our responses in each of those, and clearly I'm going through what the counts of conviction were that the jury had to address, and I pointed out the other specific instances. One was in Kentucky with regard to Mr. Story, and with Mr. Hawkins, the other predicate offenses were in Missouri. Well, I didn't say Missouri. I said outside the district. So I think it's clear from the responses how they're different, and in Poe, all of his substantive convictions were in the district. So easy on harmless error. All your authority says you have a very strict way of dealing with not meeting the time limitation and not equitably tolling and not fixing mistakes like this. But I have to say, it's kind of a sympathetic one. Now, I don't know if you want to create, you know, a new rule or what have you to govern this case where in the end it doesn't help Mr. Poe anyway. You know, he can't revisit the merits of his, we'll call it kingpin CCE conviction. He can only revisit this one constitutional defect, and as a matter of law, it's harmless error. So I guess I'm not much help on the equitable tolling question. I do think that's the better ground. It's the one Mr. Poe raised, even though it wasn't persisted in the briefs. Unique circumstances, I think this court's been pretty clear, as well as the Supreme Court, that it's not going to extend that beyond the specific facts in INS versus Thompson. Anything else? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Quinley. Mr. Coffey?
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd just like to raise one final issue, and that is that although Mr. Poe cannot raise the merits of the predicate offenses below the continuing criminal enterprise, he did make an objection at the trial level that the jury instructions were improper. The government does not dispute this, and the government does not dispute that Mr. Poe's constitutional rights were violated by those jury instructions. We only ask that Mr. Poe be given the opportunity at an evidentiary hearing to determine whether that error was harmless or not. Simply looking at a case like Lanier, a seminal case that this court heard, an evidentiary hearing was allowed. An evidentiary hearing is where it was determined that the error was not harmless.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Coffey.
Nothing further. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Thanks to all counsel. Again, to Mr. Coffey and Ms. Miller, as with the former students, we thank you for taking these cases, ably representing the petitioners. Mr. Palmer, thank you again for shepherding these cases as the counsel of record, and the case will be taken under advisement. The court will stand.